This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into a Friday edition of Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, glad to be joined by my good pal Brandon Kravitz, making his second appearance of the week, stepping in for my regular co-host Jeff Erickson, who is now officially Brandon on his way. I don't know where exactly he is. We might have to get like a flight tracker going for Jeff Erickson, heading over to Spain, a much deserved summer vacay for him. So this will be the first of a handful of shows, or the second, I should say, Brandon, where you'll be stepping in. And we got a great show coming your way. Obviously, we will do plenty of recapping from what we saw last night in yet another ridiculous, preposterous Indiana Pacers victory. They steal game one in OKC. We'll talk some Aaron Rodgers. He, of course, signing with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We'll already take a look at game two. No show for us tomorrow. No show Sunday. We take the weekends off. So we'll look ahead for some NBA Finals game two props. That's coming up in about 10 minutes. The Belmont coming up on Saturday. So we'll have Bill Finley from Down the Stretch on SiriusXM. He's going to join us later in the show, set the stage for the final leg of the Triple Crown. We'll have some baseball picks. We'll have some hockey picks. Everything coming your way later in the show. We'll have our G-Bank best bets as well. But Brandon, we need to start with last night. This is the fourth time that the Pacers have pulled off an unbelievable, 99% win probability for the opponent victory in these playoffs. Maybe we should expect it at this point. I thought things would be different against OKC. I was wrong. Pacers now lead this series 1-0. OKC still heavily favored to win the series at minus 300. But that number, of course, was minus 700 heading into last night. So much to unpack here, Brandon, but I'll let you go first. Your primary takeaways, where was your head at when the dust settled after that Tyrese Haliburton game winner last night?
I was actually doing the, I don't know if it's safe for the TV ears, but I was doing the dance that Tyrese Haliburton does after making such shots around my living room because I had Pacers +9.5 and a Pacers money line ticket. So I heard Stormy talking about, well, these money line tickets are coming out of the woodwork. If you do follow my content, that was out there pregame. This is not a postgame brag. So I was over the moon on a personal level, but still as a basketball fan, a little shocked, just like everybody else. I thought for most of the game, the Thunder looked like the far superior team. They really weren't letting the Pacers get into the flow of their offense. And I thought that the Pacers would have a chance to cover and even potentially win the game because of the way that they're able to generate those transition baskets. Yeah. They weren't getting those off misses, off turnovers, grabbing the ball out of the basket and just running. OKC defended that so well. And you try to attack the paint against this team, it's like putting your hand into a paper shredder. But the Pacers committed 19 turnovers in that first half. It was kind of a mess. The problem was, Nick, OKC couldn't convert. They couldn't convert on those turnovers. They did not shoot the ball well, particularly in the first half where they shot sub 40%. And we might need to spend a minute on this Chet Holmgren disappearing act. He was terrible in the second half. I forgot he was on the floor for a while.
I thought he was terrible in the first half, too, Brandon, to be honest. I think he got, maybe in his eyes, a bad whistle early on. There were two or three plays right at the start of the game where I thought Holmgren was really aggressive. He's attacking Miles Turner and didn't get a couple calls. And I wonder if that impacted him the rest of the way. But Chet Holmgren was brutal, brutal. I mean, this was easily his worst game of the postseason, one of his worst games of the entire year. And we'll talk a little bit about the OKC lineup change, going away from the double big lineup, putting Cason Wallace out there. But I think the headliner is the turnovers, right, Brandon? Because if you're watching this game, you're thinking, how is OKC not up 20 plus? How are they not up 30 plus at some point, right? Where, I mean, there was like a four possession stretch towards the end of the second quarter where the Pacers turned it over, I think, three times in four possessions. And like you said, 19 turnovers in the first half, 9 points off of those turnovers for OKC. And Indy came out, started turning it over again in the third quarter, really cleaned it up as the second half went along, but finished with 24 turnovers. OKC just 11 points off those turnovers for the game. The Thunder took 16 more shots than the Pacers. Everything went OKC's way. They shot just 41% from two-point range. Nobody could finish around the rim all night. And credit to Indiana, I think, for bringing that help defense. I thought Siakam and Turner were both excellent in that regard. I thought OKC expected to get some calls that just weren't coming. And to be fair to the officiating, I thought it was really consistent from start to finish last night. I thought it was called fairly on both sides. But I think OKC, you know, some of the calls they were getting in the West Finals, some of the calls they were getting against Denver weren't really there. And I thought it kind of threw them off their spot in terms of trying to finish over those bigs for the Indiana Pacers. I mentioned that lineup change. So they go with Cason Wallace. You know, they bring Isaiah Hartenstein off the bench. Not a shock necessarily, but we heard Richard Jefferson on the broadcast, Brandon, talk about it pregame and saying, look, if you're the Pacers, yeah, this is kind of a small mental victory, right? It's like this team is already adjusting for us. You know, they're making a lineup change for game one of the NBA Finals. They're going away from the starting lineup they've used in all 16 playoff games leading into that game. I don't think that's the reason OKC lost, but this is now the second time, the second game one in these playoffs where it did feel to me like, okay, is Mark Dagnall getting a little too cute here? Are the Thunder almost out scheming themselves?
Exactly what happened. And I think that was the position that Mark Dagnall put himself in by making that decision. If you lose, that's obviously going to be the narrative. But I just don't understand the need to throw a counterpunch before the fight even starts. The Oklahoma City Thunder, the best net rating that we've seen since Michael Jordan was running the show in Chicago. Why exactly do you need to change your starting lineup? Do you not think that the lineup you roll out there game after game throughout the season is good enough to beat this Indiana Pacers team? It was really odd. That felt like more of a game two, game three move. And I do think there are some bettable angles here when it comes to props because of the reverse counter. Now, I think Isaiah Hartenstein showed how valuable he can be in this series. And there are going to be some bettable angles when it comes to him and perhaps a bounce back with some of these rebounding spots with Oklahoma City players.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more in the next segment. I have some thoughts there. And part of the reason that we were approaching Chet Holmgren with some level of caution for game one is he did wonder what that minute split would be. Dagnall understandably went away from him for a lot of the second half, just 24 minutes for Chet Holmgren. You know, the game I was alluding to, Brandon, was the game one of the Denver series where OKC led throughout. They pushed the lead, you know, up to that 11 to 15 range multiple times, just could not land that final death blow. You know, in game one against Denver, they led by 13 with 6.5 minutes left, led by 9 with 2:40 remaining. And of course, we saw the Nuggets close and Aaron Gordon hit that game winning three from the wing. This to me felt eerily similar. And obviously, OKC was able to rally, take game two, take control of the series, end up winning it in seven. But a crushing blow, certainly, for the Oklahoma City Thunder to begin this series. We'll talk more about it in the next segment. We'll start looking at some props for game two, but got to talk some Pittsburgh Steelers and Aaron Rodgers. Before we do that, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use, rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15, that's R-O-T-O-1-5. Put in that code ROTO15 at checkout, 15% off any of our subscription products over at rotowire.com. All right, Brandon, big news out of the NFL yesterday afternoon. Aaron Rodgers, our long national nightmare, the saga, has finally come to a close. He will sign a one-year deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Rodgers said he expects to report to minicamp with the team next week. You know, didn't see market changes in the odds for the Steelers. Maybe this was baked in all along. Win total still sitting at 8.5. It is plus money to the over, by the way, minus 130 to the under. Steelers plus 145 to make the playoffs, plus 550 to win the AFC North. How much better do you feel about this team now with Aaron Rodgers in there, knowing that we will not have to sit through a season of Mason Rudolph?
Well, I mean, that's the biggest plus for the Pittsburgh Steelers or anybody that's a Steelers backer already in the market. But my general read is meh. Do I think the Steelers are Super Bowl contenders now? No. Do I think that they are division winner contenders? Not really. I still think they are at best the third best team in this division. But I can spin this positive if you'd like me to.
I would.
So last three seasons, after winning an MVP in 2021, you had a falling out in Green Bay, just not mentally with it. Also, that team was in rough shape. They were going through a point of transition. 2023, signs on with the Jets. He tears his Achilles. and there's really nothing to learn there. 2024, we're talking about a 40-year-old quarterback coming back from a torn Achilles, an injury that usually sees athletes, especially at that age, take a long while to return to their former selves. This is really going to be the first season since 2021 where we have an Aaron Rodgers with a good head about him, piloting a good roster, 2 years removed from a significant injury. It's at least possible that he's awesome. Also, last year, a bad version of Aaron Rodgers still had more touchdown passes than Patrick Mahomes, Jaden Daniels, Justin Herbert, Matt Stafford, Brock Purdy, Kyler Murray, and Jordan Love. So we may be writing this guy off too soon, especially with a stable organization like this. I do think it's possible that this works out.
28 touchdowns for Aaron Rodgers last year. That is definitely more than I would have guessed before looking it up this morning, Brandon. His passing touchdowns prop season long set at 23.5 right now over at DraftKings. That is minus 110 both ways. I will say this, Brandon. I agree with everything you said. This might be the best situation that he's in, both in terms of coaching, surrounding roster, health since 2021. I don't know that this moves the Steelers from, you know, wild card team. Maybe you win a wild card game to, okay, we have to take this team seriously as a Super Bowl contender. And part of the reason for that, there's not a ton of weapons in this passing game, Brandon. You got DK Metcalf. That's great. Robert Woods is currently the number two receiver. Calvin Austin is your number three receiver. We'll see if they get anything out of Roman Wilson, the Michigan product, who was injured pretty much all of last season. But not exactly a wealth of weapons for Aaron Rodgers to work with right now in that Steelers receivers room. We're going to talk more about game two of the NBA Finals coming up next. A little game of play it or pass it coming your way. Prop points. We'll be back soon.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz hanging out with you on this wonderful Friday afternoon. Just one baseball game in action in the early window right now. The Tampa Bay Rays have opened up a 3-1 lead on the Marlins. We're in the bottom of the fourth, one out. Two runners on, one on third, first, one on third for the Rays. So looking to add to that lead, Zach Littell on the mound against Edward Cabrera. We'll keep you posted on that game. We'll have some baseball plays coming your way later in the show. But Brandon, you and I are both NBA guys at heart. We want to talk more about this Thunder Pacers series. We look ahead now to game two on Sunday night. As the great Jeff Erickson predicted at the end of yesterday's show, he said, no matter what happens in game one, I guarantee you OKC will be a bigger favorite in game two. He is correct. The Thunder currently sitting as 11-point favorites, Brandon, for Sunday night. Totals down a bit, 227.5, closed around 230 for game one. We're going to take a look at some player props. We'll talk about that big number in favor of the Thunder in a bit. But to do that, we'll play one of our favorite games, play it or pass it. Brandon, I will give you a prop. You tell me if you are playing it or you are passing it for game two. We start with Tyrese Halliburton. Play it or pass it. A Tyrese Halliburton double-double at plus 165.
I'm going to pass it, and I'm not going to pass it because I don't like it. I'm going to pass it because give me the triple-double. Why are we pinching pennies here? That was Halley's second game snatching up double-digit rebounds in the playoffs. He was flying for those boards, and I think that was part of the game plan. I think they want to get the ball in Halley's hands as quick as possible, and we know that he can get there on points and assists, but if the rebounds are going to be there too, forget about the plus 165. Give me the 30-1 triple-double, so I'm going all in on this.
30-1? Wow, okay, yeah. You could talk me into that at 30-1, so... You know, I think you could forecast maybe more assists for Tyrese Halliburton in game two. I think the Thunder essentially executed exactly what they wanted to in terms of getting the ball out of Halliburton's hands, making sure he's not the guy who beat them. Of course, he was the most important shot of the game. But Halliburton only had 13 potential assists in game one compared to 12 for Andrew Nembhard. Obviously, you'd like that number to be a little bit higher, but they've held him to 13 or fewer now in all three matchups this season. So we'll see on the assist. And what worries me, Brandon, about the rebounding is, are there going to be, you know, 70 available rebounds for the Pacers like there were in game one. I mean, 56 rebounds as a team. They were plus 17 overall on the glass. We talked about OKC having 16 more field goal attempts than the Pacers for the game, but it feels like they missed all 16 of those that they generated off of turnovers. Like, are we going to see Oklahoma City shoot it that poorly again? That's what worries me.
Well, I don't think so. And still, I mean, you're getting great odds on a triple double, so that's part of it. Sure. But I think the way that I saw it was one of the things that really stood out to me throughout the game was how much Tyrese Halliburton was attacking the glass. And I think it is something that is a point of emphasis because it is so hard to run in transition on this OKC team. One way to beat their defense is to have the ball in Tyrese Halliburton's hands as quick as possible. And him snatching the rebound rather than getting the pass off of, say, a Siakam rebound is a way to do that. So obviously the ball still has to bounce in your direction in order for that to happen. But I think that that is a playable line.
All right, Brandon, next prop we have for you, play it or pass it, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander over 34.5 points. A ridiculous line, 34.5 points for game two.
It is a little ridiculous, but I'm going to play it. I think that we all figured coming into this series that it was going to be an SGA kind of matchup, as most of them are, but he averaged 39 points per game against this team in the regular season, albeit in just two games, but it was two of his more spectacular performances. And then you look at the game last night and just how easy it was for him to get through the lane against this defense. I think the Pacers are content with letting him cook, letting him go off. If they're not getting killed by Holmgren or J-Dub, then I think that they can live with it. So this is as high a number as I would bet for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But with this being a bounce back opportunity for OKC still at home, I like the spot play aspect of it. But if this number gets beyond this, absolutely do not play it. As it stands right now, I say play it.
I mean, hard to go against it, man, given how aggressive SGA was really from the jump last night. Put up his third highest usage rate of any game in the postseason. The only games that were higher were game one and game four against Minnesota. And he has gone over this number in three of the last five, dating back to the West Finals. All right, another one for OKC here, Brandon. Play it or pass it, Isaiah Hartenstein over 6.5 boards, minus 130.
I'm going to play it. This is one of my favorite looks for game two. I like points plus rebounds at 13.5 a little bit better, but a lot of that is about what he can do in terms of snatching rebounds. I would expect his minutes to bump up well past 17. I thought he was one of their most reliable players in game one. He was clearly their best rebounder statistically. He even left some chances on the board. The Pacers won this game largely because of their front court play and Chet being a no-show. Ihart is pivotal to this series. I like him over that 6.5 rebound mark.
Do you want to bet smarter this NFL season? Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a full year for just $199 plus a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum, a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up now and you'll get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from both DraftKings and the Circa Sportsbook, 24/7 video access on the fantastic VSiN Watch app, plus our 2025-26 NFL betting guide dropping on July 1st. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Head over to vsin.com/subscribe and use the promo code BOOK, B-O-O-K, to sign up. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Make sure you use that promo code BOOK. All right, back to play it or pass it, Brandon. Got a few more I want to run by you. Pascal Siakam, over 28.5 points plus rebounds plus assists. Did go over that number in game one. This is minus 110 for game two on Sunday.
I'm not going to lie. Of all the ones that you sent over to me today, this is the one that I stewed over the most. But I'm going to pass it. I think the rebounding was a little bit of an outlier for this series. I expect the Thunder to be much better in that area. Siakam's not really a consistent assist guy. Recent history does tell us that this is a good bet. He's gone over this number in six of his last 10, but with how much I expect the Thunder to clamp down defensively, I just can't get there for 28.5 at a minus 110.
Yeah, you wonder about the rebounds for him as well. Really, everybody on the Pacers, right? 10 rebounds for Siakam in game one, 10 for Haliburton, 12 for Aaron Nesmith. Just so many missed shots, so many rebound opportunities for the Pacers in that game one. Sticking with Indiana here, Brandon. Play it or pass it, Aaron Nesmith, over 1.5 made threes. Now, very attainable number. Went 3 of 7 from three last night. But this is minus 175 for game two.
I say play it, though, even at the juicy number, okay, and play it every game. Aaron Nesmith has made more threes in this postseason than any other Pacer. He lives in the corners, and the Thunder let you shoot from the corners. I think that this is playable, not just in this game. I think this is playable in the entire series under all potential game scripts. I love this one. 64% implied probability at the minus 175 for a guy that is hitting this 73% of the time throughout the postseason. I will definitely take it.
22 wide open three-point attempts last night for the Indiana Pacers. They went 11 of 22 on wide open threes. If you're searching for reasons, and there are many why OKC lost that game, Thunder 6 of 20 converting their wide open three-point looks. All right, let's finish out with the big one here, Brandon. We mentioned it. Thunder, even bigger favorites for game two, despite dropping game one. Number sits at 11 right now. Play it or pass it. The Indiana Pacers to cover the 11 in game two.
I'm going to pass it. And part of this is just out of stubbornness. I said to myself that I was going to take the Pacers +9.5 in game one. We got that, cashed it, and that I would turn right around. And if I was right, if I was wrong, especially if I was right, I was going to turn around and bet the Oklahoma City Thunder in game two. What I don't like is paying this tax for a team that got beat in game one. That sort of thing frustrates me. So I'm going to let the market pour in on the Indiana Pacers at +11. And hopefully I am able to sit back and get something closer to a 10.5 before tip off of game two. But to me, it's Thunder or pass.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if we do see some movement in that number leading up to Sunday. I mean, I do think a lot of people are going to want to bet Indiana, right, based on what we saw in game one. But we do need to keep in mind. So, you know, we compared this to game one of the Denver series in round two. You know, OKC blows that one. They lose at home. Well, I will remind you, game two, 149-106 in favor of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Well, we'll see if that defense can continue generating turnovers at the same rate. I mean, certainly I have to think that OKC will be better finishing around the rim, but suddenly we do have ourselves a series. Thunder minus 300 still to win the NBA Finals. All right, we got to head to break, but we're going to talk some horse racing when we come back. Bill Finley from SiriusXM, he's going to join us to help us preview the Belmont Stakes. We got some hockey talk. We got some baseball talk coming for you later in the show. Stick with us. You're watching Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz hanging out with you on this Friday. We've got the Belmont Stakes, the final leg of the Triple Crown, coming our way tomorrow to help us break everything down. It's Bill Finley from Down the Stretch on SiriusXM. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Again, you can catch Down the Stretch Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM NBC Sports Audio. That's Channel 85. Every Saturday, Bill and Dave Johnson preview the day's best horse races. And Bill, welcome back, man. Great to have you. Obviously, a big Saturday coming up in the horse racing world. So, of course, we do not have a Triple Crown on the line tomorrow, but generally, what are the big storylines that we should be following this weekend at the Belmont?
Well, it's a shame we don't have a Triple Crown on the line because of the fact that Sovereignty didn't run in the Preakness. But it's really the big, we got the next best thing. We got the three top three finishers from the Kentucky Derby, Sovereignty, journalism and Baeza all coming back in here. So, and they all ran well in their races. Journalism was the only one of that group that ran in the Preakness, which he won. Of course, Sovereignty won the Derby, and Journalism was second, and Baeza was a close third. So, you know, it's kind of the battle for three-year-old supremacy. Now, that won't be decided till the end of the year in the Breeders' Cup, but whoever wins this race on Saturday, unless it's someone else other than those three, and I would be shocked if it was someone else. They get the for what it's worth, they get the bragging rights until they get into the summer races. We've got the best three-year-old, and you know, we mean business.
Bill, it is fascinating when you see we have the winner of the Kentucky Derby, we have the winner of the Preakness here, and it does feel like this showdown at the final leg of the Triple Crown to see who can come out on top. I like the way that you spin that. Journalism enters the Belmont Stakes with a full load of confidence after winning five of his last six starts. How does that sort of momentum carry over in horse racing?
Well, the problem is sometimes it doesn't. And a lot of people will be looking at Journalism and not liking his chances because he's the only horse to run in all three. And, you know, racing has changed so much back between the 40s and 50s. Horses used to run once a week, 35 times a year, et cetera. Now they run five, six times a year with 5 months off, 4 months off in between the races. There'll be a lot of people who will be looking at him tomorrow and saying he's shot. He doesn't have another bullet. You know, he ran great in the Derby, ran great in the Preakness. Now he's trying in his third race in 5 weeks to do it again. I wouldn't throw him out, but I know some people that have absolutely thrown him out because they think we've seen the best of him, and whatever he's going to bring on Saturday won't be good enough.
Talking with Bill Finley, you could catch him on Down the Stretch Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM, NBC Sports Audio, Channel 85. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Bill, you know, you mentioned Sovereignty, of course, took down the Kentucky Derby, did not compete in the Preakness. Is there an advantage here for Sovereignty? Is he considered fresher, you know, than the rest of the field?
Well, him and Baeza would be in the same boat. Baeza didn't run in the Preakness either. He has not run since the Derby. You know, I hate to admit it because I hate the way this sport has changed where everybody, you know, treats their horses like they're, you know, fine porcelain china and are afraid to do anything with them. But by and large, Sovereignty and Baeza should have at least some sort of advantage over Journalism in that they're fresh and they didn't run in the Preakness. Now, it doesn't always work that way. And every horse is different. Journalism may come out there tomorrow and run out of his skin. And, you know, and I'm not saying he won't, but I think the fact that he is, as I said, doing the three races in 5 weeks, Mystic Dan did it last year. I'll give you an example of what happens to these horses sometimes. Mystic Dan did it last year, won the Derby, ran second in the Preakness, and then ran eighth in the Belmont, and that kicked off a five race losing streak. So you can see that it does take a toll on these horses, and a lot of people look for the fresher horses in here, which, again, would be Sovereignty and Baeza. But we'll find out more on a Saturday afternoon.
A lot of attention paid on the short shots, I understand, but let's talk some long shots here. Heart of Honor and Uncaged offer the biggest payouts, both at 30-1 odds. We did see a long shot almost pull off the upset in the previous leg of the Triple Crown with Gosker. Is this something that we should at least consider here, if not for an outright win, for a show, for a place? Is there a way to play these long shots?
I hate to tell you, but I don't think there is. And, you know, the best three horses, you know, this isn't NASCAR. It's not like they just turn on the keys and put the gas in and they run the same race every time. But well, first of all, you mentioned Uncaged. He's got absolutely no shot whatsoever. He doesn't even belong in this race. And Heart of Honor is not completely out of it. He ran first time out. He came from the racing in Dubai and didn't have a good trip in the Preakness. He broke kind of sideways and was shuffled back a little bit. Trainer says he was real, you know, nervous before the race. He ran back to his very best races. He might have a chance to get in there. But, you know, and the other horse that you might want to take a look up is Crudo, who is owned in part by Celebrity Chef Bobby Flay. Now, this horse ran a huge race last time out in the the Preakness undercard in a race called the Sir Barton Stakes. But he won by 7 1/4 lengths. But the question is, who did he beat? And he didn't beat horses of this caliber. So, and I'd love to get Imaginative here and come say this 20-1 shot, throw him in, or this horse looks great. But, you know, if I think you just have to swallow hard and play the favorites and figure out a way to get, you know, the exacta out of them.
Horse Racing's Triple Crown wraps up Saturday, of course, with the Belmont Stakes at Saratoga. Get in the action with our friends over at First Bet and play in the free First Bet in VSiN Belmont Stakes Pick'em Challenge. Enter your picks for Saturday's top races to win great prizes, including up to a $500 wagering voucher from First Bet. Head over to VSiN.com/Belmont to play. That's VSIN.com/Belmont. Got a friend, Bill Finley, joining us via the Progressive guest line, helping us break down all of the storylines leading into the Belmont tomorrow. Bill, we got to talk weather. Rain is in the forecast, but we'll see how much we actually get. But if we do get some rain, especially in the morning, how will it impact this race? Does it impact your betting strategy at all?
Well, it wouldn't, because I think if anything, first of all, nobody wants to run on a sloppy track. You know, people, even trainers who have slop horses, you know, they want it to be a fairer test and a real test of these horses. But that leads me back to back to Sovereignty. And I've been watching the weather report as well. He ran the best race of his life by a mile in the Kentucky Derby on a sloppy track. So, you know, he's a sure thing on the slop. You have no idea about some of these other horses. Journalism ran second in the Derby on the slop. So, you know, he handled it well as well. So those two, and Baez are the same thing, who ran well on the wet track in the Kentucky Derby when he was third. So again, if it's a sloppy track, that looks like it's only going to be making it even harder for the long shots to deal with the so-called big three.
I've heard good things about Hill Road, winner of the Peter Pan about a month back. Hill Road sitting at a tempting 10-1. So, you know, perhaps slightly in the middle of some of the horses that we're talking about here. Is that a horse worth a look? And how does that sort of recent history of success factor in for you?
He is worth a look. And mainly because he's trained, the guy that trains him, Chad Brown, is really one of the very best in the business. He won a prep for this race called the Peter Pan Stakes a couple weeks ago. And the Peter Pan has produced a lot of winners of the Belmont over the years. But again, you have to look at, has he been playing against the Colorado Rockies? Maybe not, but he hasn't been playing against the New York Yankees. And, you know, can he prove himself at this level? Can he move up in class? Sure, he could, but he's going to have to run a lot better race than he has in his previous few starts. So I'm not in love with him at all. The other horse we haven't mentioned that might be worth a little bit of a look is Rodriguez, who is the 3-horse with Mike Smith at 6-1 in the morning line. Under normal circumstances, I'd give him a pretty big shot because he won the Wood Memorial last time out back in April, but he had to be scratched out of the Derby with a foot problem. Then he was supposed to run in the Preakness and they didn't enter him at the last minute. So I don't like horses going into big races off, you know, with problems. And clearly, I mean, they haven't been able to get this guy into the first two legs of the Triple Crown. So, you know, they've been trying to work out some issue with him. But if he runs back to his best races, he would, I guess if you say could pick the one horse that could beat the top three, that would be Rodriguez. But that would be, and that would mean he's going to have to get out to a fast early lead and not have anybody run with him early, which Crudo probably would do. So if he gets the right trip and he's feeling like his old self, he maybe has a chance.
Excellent, excellent stuff, Bill. Really appreciate you giving us some of your time this afternoon. Best of luck to you and everybody else betting the Belmont on Saturday. You can catch Bill on Down the Stretch, SiriusXM. That's NBC Sports Audio, Channel 85. We got to head to break. Some baseball picks, some hockey talk coming your way next on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen joined by Brandon Kravitz. Here with you for another 15 minutes, taking you up to the top of the hour. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next, as always. He's got Millie Ball joining the show. She's going to give out her best bets for the Belmont. We're going to close things out with a little hockey talk. We'll give you some baseball plays. We'll, of course, hand out our G-Bank best bets of the night before we leave you for the weekend. Brandon, we take a look now at game two of the Stanley Cup Finals, Panthers-Oilers. Oilers win in overtime in game one. They're slight favorites on the money line tonight, minus 112 versus minus 108 for Florida. Total coming in the same as game one, 6.5, minus 125 to the under. Puck line, Edmonton -1.5, that's plus 210. Florida minus 258 to cover the 1.5. How do you break down this game, Brandon? What are you looking at? I know you have a goal scorer prop that you want to get off your chest.
I mean, this is just such an even series, and we saw this last year when these two teams met up. It's hard to string together consecutive wins. My first lean would be on the Florida Panthers to win the game and the under. I mean, we saw this was going to go under until this one went to overtime. So I have faith in the Stars to show up, and with either side getting hot, especially with power play opportunities, I'm just going to lay off of the side, going to lay off of the total, and I'm going to lean into the player that I trust the most in this situation in a bounce back opportunity. And that's Sam Bennett. I like him over half a goal scored plus 220. You can get it at, you're not going to find a hotter player with a stick in his hand than Sam Bennett. This guy is a thunderbolt on the ice. He's playing at an unreal level of confidence, and he's been scoring routinely. Two goals in game one, at least one goal in 8 of his last 15 hockey games. Bennett leads the NHL in the postseason with 12 goals, but he also leads in expected goals. So the amazing performance that we've seen from Bennett could actually be better. And the gap between him and number two on that expected goals list is fairly significant. And when you consider, we're talking about guys like Connor McDavid, Dreisaitl, and even his teammate Connor Verhaeghe, the way that they've been playing, it just puts into perspective how good Sam Bennett has been. I still think we're getting a bit of a bargain on him. The Panthers are a great bounce back team, so I'll take their hottest player to score a goal in a bounce back spot. Panthers money line and the under if I had to play either side, but I think that Sam Bennett goal to me feels like the best bet on the board.
There we have it. Sam Bennett to score plus 220 tonight. If you like that Florida money line, you want to tether that to the under 6.5 same game parlay that pays plus 248 over at the DK Sportsbook. Brandon, let's turn our attention to the Friday baseball slate, a heavy night slate tonight. We'll get to some of your plays in a moment. Got that Rays Marlins game still in action. We're now in the bottom of the sixth, one out for the Tampa Bay Rays. Zach Littell still in the game. We'll see if he trots out there for the top of the seventh. He's given up 6 hits, 1 earned run, 4 strikeouts for Littell. Rays still lean the Marlins 3-1 again in the bottom of the sixth there. We have the hottest team in baseball in action tonight, Brandon. The Baltimore Orioles. They might not feel like they're hot, but they have the longest active winning streak right now. They've won 8 of their last 10 games, trying desperately to climb out of that early hole. They're taking on maybe the coldest team in Major League Baseball right now. The Oakland Athletics did win their last time out, but this has been a brutal 4 or 5 week stretch for the A's. Got Dean Kramer on the mound going up against JP Sears. I know you have a money line play here.
Yeah, and for the record, I'm an Orioles fan, so this gives me no pleasure to say this, but the Orioles are on a highly fraudulent 6-game winning streak right now. They beat the White Sox 3 straight. You earned 0 stars for me for doing that. The White Sox are not a real baseball team. And then they take 3 from the Mariners. Seattle, by the way, a bottom 8 baseball team in the league over the last 30 days. Even worse if you isolate that over the last 2 weeks. So they got them at the right time. Now add to that, let's talk about the pitcher. Dean Kramer is on the mound. I love him when he's at home. He pitches very well at Camden Yards. He is a train wreck on the road. 29 of his 35 earned runs have come outside the walls of Baltimore, Maryland. I will take my chances with the underdog in what should be a high-scoring game. I think there's going to be a lot of volatility here. Just simply being on the underdog presents some value, especially with how overvalued the Orioles are entering into tonight.
got a really fun interleague series going on this weekend in Detroit. The best team in the National League, the Chicago Cubs, taking on the best team in the American League, the Detroit Tigers. Ben Brown going up against Tarek Skubal tonight. Tigers big favorites on the money line, Brandon. Are you taking that at -175?
I am. There's not a Skubal game that I don't bet in some way, shape, or form. I always find an angle to bet his games because in a world of unpredictability, how Skubal is going to pitch is one of the most predictable things that you can find in sports. So I looked at every single angle to see how I could bet into this tonight. The strikeout prop is ridiculous. The totals are juiced like crazy. I mean, the total right now is just too low. Once you get below seven, it's a no play for me across Major League Baseball. The first five is juiced like crazy, -160. For the Cubs to knock in under 1.5 runs, the win to me is the way to go. The Tigers have lost just one home game this season with Skubal on the mound, and it took extra innings in order to get it done. And it was a division rival in the Kansas City Royals. The Tigers are 5-1 straight up on Skubal pitching nights in their last six. So this would typically be an under spot for me, but the Cubs can hit. So I'm going to respect the offense that they present. Number one in runs scored per game, and they're even better when they get away from Wrigley Field. I think the Tigers' money line is the safer side here, even laying some juice.
All right, let's get to one more game. I will have an unprecedented baseball play coming for you to end the show for a G-Bank best bet. But we'll save that one, Brandon. We're looking at the Braves and the Giants. Braves favored on the money line tonight, -137, the current price over at DraftKings. Spencer Schwellenbach taking on Hayden Birdsong. Total sitting at 7.5. Which side are you on?
This is my favorite play of the night. Couple of factors to look at. I like the under at 7.5, but a couple of factors to look at for me when I'm betting totals. For one, I always target unders. That's just the way that my baseball betting mind is wired. How have teams performed over the last month? I want to look at that. Bro, the Braves are top five in terms of unders cashing over the last month. Teams that go under the total in games, 55% or more of the time, there are 15 of them in Major League Baseball. The Giants and the Braves are two of them. Now let's look at weather. It's going to be chilly tonight, a little bit of wind coming in off of the bay, so we like that. And then, of course, you mentioned it with the pitching matchup. Hayden Birdsong has been pitching lights out lately, going deep into his starts. Schwellenbach has racked up 22 Ks over his last two starts. So all signs point to an under here. Two really good baseball teams, but it should be tight and low scoring.
Want to hit one quick note in the National Football League, Brandon. The Baltimore Ravens extended Rashad Bateman earlier today, 3 years, close to $37 million on that deal, about $20 million reportedly guaranteed. So he's now tied to the Baltimore Ravens through 2029. Ravens 7-1 to win the Super Bowl, +350 alongside the Bills to win the AFC. -145 right now to win the AFC North. Is that bettable to you?
Not really. That's just the way too juicy for a really competitive division. I've got way too much respect for Joe Burrow. I've got too much respect even for Mike Tomlin and their new quarterback and Aaron Rodgers. I seem to be slightly more optimistic than the market on what Rodgers can bring to the table. And Lamar Jackson still at the end of the day is a running quarterback, and running quarterbacks do tend to get hurt. And all we need is not even a season long injury, just a 1 month injury from Lamar Jackson absolutely torpedoes a division win bet. So to me, it's not worth locking up your units in order to bet that ahead of the season.
Well, I noticed you said you don't have any respect for the Cleveland Browns and Kenny Pickett, so we're going to lock that one away. It's time for our best bets of the night. They're brought to you by GBank, introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank First Bet in Beeson. All you have to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You get $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and Beeson completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through October 31st. That's a $200 value. It's the $500 trifecta from GBank First Bet in VSiN. Head to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Brandon, wrapping up the show, your GBank best bet.
Let's get Sam Bennett to slap one in over half a goal scored in what should be an exciting game two in the NHL.
Dodgers are plus money tonight. We're taking the money line plus 105 in St. Louis and playing basically 500 baseball for the last month. I'm just waiting them to kick it into gear. Got Justin Wroblewski on the mound. Sonny Gray, he's been up and down for St. Louis, been touched up by some of the better offenses he's faced this season. Give me the Dodgers at plus money. That's going to wrap it up for us this week. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming your way next here on VSiN.